I don't know if I made a list. I don't know if I would end up with jumping out of an airplane on it. Although my aunt, who did that for her 80th birthday, she jumped out of an airplane for her 80th birthday. I don't think it's the jump, it's the landing that worries me. We've been doing a series of talks out of the book of Ecclesiastes from the theme of this movie, calling it the bucket list. The basic idea of the list, the bucket list in the movie is that these guys are both diagnosed with terminal illnesses, and they have to deal with what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I found in this movie a lot of gospel themes and a lot of deep challenge for myself, because even though at this point in life I haven't been diagnosed with the fact that I only have so long to live, the reality is that we all live on this earth in that way, that life is terminal. I mean, the death rate is 1-to-1, and the question is, what are we going to do with this life that God has given us? How are we going to spend it? And how are we going to make sure, or how am I going to make sure that I spend my life in the pursuit of the things that really count, that really matter, that really make sense, that really, you know, when I get to the end, I look back, I can say, you know, in fact, I say this to my wife often. I say, you know, Heidi, if I could do it over again, I would. How do I make sure that I have a life that really, I mean, those are not just words, that literally my life ends up making sense and having purpose and meaning and value. And that's what the book of Ecclesiastes really helps us to go deep into. It helps us to wrestle deeply with the questions of purpose, meaning, and pursuit. What am I pursuing with my life? Now, here's the deal. Let's be honest. If we just kind of are left to ourselves and just kind of let life happen, we will gravitate to the lowest common denominators, and life will just kind of, it'll just buzz by without us ever giving real thought to the deep things and the things that matter and make sense. That's why Socrates said that the unexamined life is not worth living. We need to stop sometimes and take a look at where we're going and make sure that we are charting our lives and pursuing the things that really matter, the things that really make sense. And so kind of the challenge, and I hope you're picking up on this if you've been here the last few weeks, is that we ought to be intentional about getting our lives connected to things that count, that we literally ought to make sort of a list. Now, here's the challenge. I want you to do this just for a minute. If you don't have a piece of paper, take one out. If you don't have one to take out, you just sit and think about this. But I want you to think about your own bucket list. And just for a second, you're looking at life and looking forward to what's going to happen between now and that day, whenever that is for you. What do you want to be known for? What is it in your life that you want to make sure that you accomplish? What is it that you think, man, if I can just see this happen in my world and in my life, I think life, I'll look back on it and I'll be content and I'll be satisfied and I think it will be worth it. I will say, you know, if I could do it all over again, I would. Take a moment, just right now where you are, think about that. I'm just going to give you 30 seconds of silence to jot down a couple notes and to think about that question. Because that's what Solomon wants us to do. He wants us to interact with it, all right? Ready? Go. A lot of you aren't used to the awkward silence in a church service. Always have to have something going on. The next question is, how are you going to get there? And that's kind of what the movie did for me. It made me realize, listen, if I want to go skydiving, I better find a plan and make it happen. Life is like this. We live in a world where life will just buzz by and we'll look back and go, man, I had all these things I felt like I needed to happen in my life and never got there. My goal this morning is to challenge you in two ways. First of all, it is to challenge you. My goal this morning is to challenge you that the life of faith in Jesus is very similar to the call to go skydiving, that we kind of are happy with a very comfortable, safe faith. But the faith of the scriptures is not that way. The faith of the scriptures is a call to a crazy adventure, and we need to find that, and we need to be a part of that. We need to figure out what it means to follow Jesus and do that. But having that in our heads, and this is where a lot of us are going to struggle and miss it, is that having that in our heads, we kind of have it figured out. Yeah, I've heard that. I kind of been in church. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. But eventually, I've got to walk to the edge of the airplane, look down, and realize it is a huge freaking jump to jump off of this thing, but I've got to go. I've got to take some steps in my life. For some of you, that's a step of just belief to begin with. It is to say, you know, I've got this background, and I've got these struggles, and I've got these issues, but I need to just take this leap of faith and realize God is calling me. Jesus has died for me. He makes all the difference, and now I'm just going to take a leap of faith. For some of us, it may be in our walk with Christ coming to the point where we just say, you know, I have gotten to the point where my walk with Jesus is just safe and boring. Jesus does not want it to be that way. The call of Christ is to an adventure. It is to live for something that is bigger than ourselves. And so I just want to maybe challenge you for a few minutes this morning to look at that as well. And we're going to do that out of the book of Ecclesiastes this morning as we struggle with the purpose and meaning of life. And Solomon's going to give us some stories. He's going to give us some people, just kind of some images of people who are kind of every man, every woman, but their pursuits in life ended up with life being pretty much wasted. Life not having a lot of value and meaning. They're kind of like, if you remember the movie A Christmas Story, you know, with Ralphie wanting a BB gun, and his whole life is about, you know, getting this BB gun. But also in the movie, one of the things that's hilarious is he is all about getting this little orphan Annie decoder pin in the mail. And so through the first, especially the first part of the movie, he's listening to Little Orphan Annie on the radio. This is back in the, I think, the 50s. So he's listening on the radio to Little Orphan Annie show. He's sent off to get this decoder pin. And every day he runs home and he opens the mailbox. He looks in the mailbox. He's waiting to see what's inside and it's not in there. So he closes the mailbox. Doesn't get the mail for the rest of the family. He's just looking for his little orphan Annie decoder pin. Runs inside. Well, finally one day it shows up. Opens the mailbox and there's a little orphan Annie decoder pin, or the box that it comes in. He goes inside, finds the only room in the house that he can have any privacy and silence. He barricades himself in the restroom. He sits there and he starts opening the box, and he's got this message, this secret message that's a series of numbers from the Little Orphan Annie radio show that is their secret message of the day. And in his mind, he thinks, man, if I could get this message decoded, maybe they want me to save the world. Maybe they want me to come and solve some huge world problem. And he's all excited about that. He gets in the bathroom. His little brother's banging on the door. Let me in. I have to go. And he's on the inside. He starts this decoding. And he's writing on a piece of paper, and he's spinning the little thing and matching the numbers up with the letters, and he's just, the climax is building in the movie. You're excited. And what it ends up spelling out as he decodes the secret message is, don't forget to drink your Ovaltine. And he is crushed. He's devastated that this thing that he has built his whole life up for is nothing more than a cheap advertisement for chocolate milk. I think a lot of times in life, and this is what Solomon wants us to see, we pursue things and we build up our life around things that we think have so much value, will make life tick, will make it work. And we take out the decoder pin and we start working through it, and life goes by. And all of a sudden, and this is Solomon's story, you hit the end of it. And you're like Ralphie in the bathroom, who just is disgusted and throws the thing away, because everything I thought that was going to work, I thought this was going to make life tick, just ends up being something that's nothing more than a cheap advertisement. It ends up being something that's nothing more than something I wasted my life on. Solomon's going to take us through some stories, and he's going to show us from kind of the platform on things. And this is our challenge this morning. Our challenge is on the bucket list. We need to go skydiving. We need to take the adventure and go above just this world. If you have your Bible, go ahead and flip over to Ecclesiastes. We'll be in chapter 6. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one and read with us. Take that Bible home. Use it yourself. Give it as a gift to a friend, whatever. But we would like you to have that Bible this morning, and we'll be in Ecclesiastes 6, which is on page 471. I'm going to start off reading the first verse, kind of get the ball rolling in the text. Then we're going to walk through this text. Then we're going to do something different. I'm going to kind of set things up. We're going to take a few minutes. We're going to sing some more. Then I'm going to come out at the end, and I'm actually going to finish my sermon with some application. Where do we go from here? What does this look like in the Bible? How's it look like in our lives as we try not to be these guys, these people, okay? And so chapter 6, verse 1, it starts off by saying, there's an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. He says, man, as I've kind of looked around life, I've kind of checked out earth, there is an evil. There is something that is just, it's not good. It's bad. It doesn't work. It's broken. And it says it lies heavy on mankind. Kind of the literal means not only that it's heavy, but it happens to so many people. He says, listen, this evil, this struggle, this pursuit of meaning and value that ends up like the little Annie decoder pin, it's just heavy on humankind. It's kind of something that happens to so many people. They don't know what to do with it. It is this pursuit that just kind of ends them with you know, you think you have it all. George Harrison, you know, from the Beatles said this. He said, when you've had all the experiences, met all the famous people, made some money, toured the world, and got all the acclaim, you still think, is that it? Some people might be satisfied with that, but I wasn't, and I'm still not. We're on this pursuit, and we end up at this place where, is that it? Is that all that life has to offer? And I don't know if you struggle with this, but I think a large part of being human, of being a person, is that we want to figure out why we're here. We want our lives to make sense and to have purpose and meaning. And we want that, if you're a parent, we want that for our kids. And so we start trying to find avenues in life where we can make life click and make everything work. And especially then all of a sudden, we feel like, man, I blew by those important years. I used to be the glory days, used to be an athlete, I used to be an artist, I used to be this, used to be that. And then we kind of feel like we've blown by that. And so we start thinking, man, if I can just do this and it's kind of through my children, I've got to provide them with every opportunity, every pursuit, I got to give them the right clothes and the right opportunities and get them in 42 different kids' sports so that they practice around the clock, and got to have them in violin lessons, and because that will give them purpose and happiness. But what happens, we just keep the cycle going because the very things that left us going, that's it, are the very things we start sending our kids to thinking, well, maybe their attempt at it will be better. And Solomon wants us to meet these guys. And he's talking about areas of life that are wasted. And he says, listen, there's a grievous evil. And the key phrase here is under the sun. If you've been with us for very long studying Ecclesiastes, you realize this is a phrase that is in this book over and over and over again. He uses it all the time. And this is his point. This is his point for the whole book. That we as human beings are living our lives on this planet, and we're kind of trapped under the sun. And we start living kind of thinking, man, I have to make life work in this realm of the earth, the realm that is under the sun. And Solomon's conclusion is, if that's all that there is, if what is under the sun is all that there is, it's vain, it's worthless, it's a breath of wind, it's here and gone and has no meaning, and we ought to just pack it up and go home. But what he does is he raises the questions that the rest of the Bible answers for us, and that is this: there is a pursuit that is not under the sun. There is something for us to go after, to leap for, to believe in, to live for. There is something bigger than this place. And if our lives are consumed with the pursuit of Jesus, the pursuit of that, this sense of faith, if we can get beyond what's under the sun, it's in that realm that then everything under the sun makes sense. It connects. But if all we do is pursue what's under the sun, we're going to end up just like these people. So a couple stories. And first one is a story about a guy who had wasted opportunity. Look at this. Verse 2, he says, a man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor so that he lacks nothing or all that he desires, yet God does not give him the power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. Let's meet the first guy. The first guy is a guy who has it all. He has wealth, he has possessions, and he has honor. He has prestige. People who know him, people have exalted him. They know that he's important. They have put him on a stage and all this kind of stuff. By the way, did any of you put on your list that you want to be the first woman vice president or first African-American president? One of those ain't going to work out, okay? Just letting you know, okay? But anyway, the truth is that this guy is somebody who has power, he has honor, he has wealth, he has opportunity. But the important thing, and check this out, look down at the verse, it says, God has given that to him. This is not, that Solomon is ascribing, he is letting us know that the good things of this world are gifts from God. Kind of one mindset in kind of religious life, okay, is that everything that's on this planet is really kind of bad. And the best way to do spirituality is to become this weird aesthetic that you dress in black and you have some kind of hoodie on or a hood over your head and you walk around in, these weird sandals and you eat nothing but crickets and, rice. And that's how you really are a spiritual person. If I can just purge myself of everything, don't enjoy what you eat, don't enjoy anything in life, that the only real way to God is this weird path through asceticism. But that's not the Bible. The Bible teaches us that the things on this earth are good, and God created the world so that we could enjoy those things. They are gifts from God. But everything that we have, they are opportunities. They're things that God has granted to us. And what it says in the text here is that not only God gave these things to this person, he has it all, but God did not give him the ability to enjoy them. Both the things, but the failure to be connected to them, to enjoy them, are both for Solomon from the hand of God. How do we resolve that? I mean, is God kind of a masochist? Is kind of a sadist? Is he like, all right, my goal in life, I'm God, and what I want to do is I'm going to give people all this stuff, and as they have all this stuff, they think it's going to make them happy, but it doesn't, and that's my doing too, because I really want people to be miserable. That's my goal in life. The more unhappy people, the happier I am. No. But here's the deal. This is what I think Solomon is getting at. This world is broken. This world is fallen. To understand this, I have to go back to understand the story of the first two people. God created the first two people. Their names were Adam and Eve, put them in this garden that was beautiful, and said, listen, I will give you everything to enjoy. I have made a perfect place. There are fruit trees forever. And man, it's good stuff. There are grapes, there are apples, there are oranges, there are all the animals you could want. I mean, it's a great place. Everything's a pet, man. Even the lion wants to come up and hang out with you, and you can pet it and hang out. And he gives the first two people the responsibility for giving them names. And they are interacting in this place that is perfect. And what God says is, listen, you can enjoy everything, but I do have one deal for you, okay? And God puts a tree in the garden. And in the middle of the garden, he says, listen, here's the deal. I don't want you to eat from that tree. And everybody gets hung up. Oh, well, why did God do that? Why did God create this one tree? Why didn't he just make it where it was perfect and we didn't have that choice? And the truth of the matter is the tree isn't the issue. The issue is that God put them in a place where they could enjoy everything, but they had to have a willful decision to pursue him. And the tree was an image. They had to walk by it. And as they walked by it every day, it was a decision. Am I going to live for myself or am I going to pursue something that is not under the sun? Am I going to live for my creator or am I just going to live to fill my appetites and do the things I want to do and make my opportunities all about me? And in a hard decision, Adam and Eve, the first two people, made a decision that they would rather take a bite from the fruit of that tree and exalt themselves rather than living for their creator. And what happened is a result of the fall. This is in the story of the Bible is this. As a result of the fall, everything that God made good, made for our enjoyment, made beautiful, made wonderful, made for us to experience and have contentment and happiness in, becomes for us stuff that we now pursue. Just like they pursued the tree, we begin to pursue those things. It takes us from God, and even when God gives it to us, gives us these opportunities in life, we think the opportunity, we think that, listen, that fruit, it's beautiful, it's good for the taste, it's wonderful. This opportunity I have now becomes that which I live my life for, and then I get it, and I go, really, this is all there is? Because all these things, I mean, all the stuff that is under the sun, they all make lousy gods. They make great things that are gifts from God. They make lousy gods. And what we do is we pursue sports. We pursue a car. We pursue having the right job. We pursue having a great body. We pursue all these other things in life. And here's what don't be an aesthetic. Don't go, well, if I just deny myself all this stuff, that's real spirituality. But don't pursue these things as the be-all to end-all to life, because if you do, you'll end up like this guy. And this is what Solomon says. This guy, God gave him everything. He pursued it. God gave it all to him. But when he got there, God kept him from enjoying it, because we will not enjoy life in anything but Christ. That's it. If our pursuit is the stuff, we're going to end up just like this guy with wasted opportunities. And we all have opportunities. Whatever you're, I mean, as a student here this morning, you are in a school that is a blessing, that you may hate going to that school and despise, but listen, having the right to learn and grow, you have an opportunity. But some of you are pursuing that like, man, if I can just get done with school, if I can get good grades, if I can get into the right college, life will be okay. Some of you students are going, if I could just leave this school forever, life would be okay. Where is it in your life? I mean, this is, if you've been here for a while, you've heard me talking about this over and over. We all have this stuff in our life that we have set up as the be-all to end-all. Parents, is it your kids? Have you determined that if your kids get the right grades, or if they make the right soccer team, or if they play in the right sports, or if they get in the right organization, or if they will just behave when you're in Walmart, that life would be okay? And Solomon says, listen, we have opportunities, and they are blessings from God. God gave us these opportunities, gave us this life to enjoy it. But here, listen to this. This is so important. Enjoyment of things is a byproduct of knowing Christ and pursuing him. Enjoyment of things is a byproduct of knowing Christ and enjoying him and pursuing him. If I pursue this stuff here, listen, I could go on listing forever, whatever it is. It is possible, and I'm not prying, but it is possible that there are things that you just wrote on your bucket list that you could have it in its fullness, and God will not allow you to enjoy it because that has been your life pursuit. And it's not that the thing that you wrote on your list is bad. It's just not ultimate. And what happens is you will find wasted life, wasted opportunity in this. The second guy wastes relationships. Look at this, chapter 6, verse 3. He says, if a man fathers 100 children, that right there ought to give us like the cold sweats, okay? We were watching, sometimes I just wonder what happens. We had family movie night the other night, and we decided we were going to watch Cheaper by the Dozen. All right, now, for those of you who are kind of new to Genesis, you got to get this background. I have three amazing kids. And about 4 or 5 months ago, we found out that my wife was pregnant again, and I have this grandpa look. We're going to be in the hospital, and nobody's going to think I'm the dad. They're going to think I'm the grandpa, and I'm going to have to, like, slap a nurse because they're just not going to be able to understand. No, I gray hair and all, I really am the father of this child, two of them. We found out we were having twins, okay? So we're watching. We have twins on the way. My wife is, I got to be careful. I'll say too much and I'll y'all go tell her and I'll be in trouble. So, but we're having twins. We're sitting watching Cheaper by the Dozen. And those of you who know my wife, this is going to amaze you. Sitting there on the couch, not able to get up because she is exhausted, I heard these words come out of her mouth. I want more. I said, you are psycho. Turn this movie off. It is not happening, okay? We are not going to make this mistake twice. I mean, I'm really excited. I can't wait. God is so good. Children are a gift from the Lord. The Bible teaches us they are a heritage from God. I'm so blessed. But this guy has 100, and I'm thinking, seriously, dude. But here's the deal. What Solomon is setting up for us is this guy believes in his heart that children are the answer. If I just have relationships, if I just have enough kids, they will think I'm cool. They will think I'm the best. They will think I'm the most wonderful father in the world. And it's all about this relationship deal. And see, the first thing on our bucket list is find a true friend. We need community. We need relationships. But those relationships are a byproduct again. They are not the pursuit. And he says this guy has 100 kids, okay? Chapter 6, verse 3 again. Man fathers 100 children, lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things. He says, listen, he has 100 kids. He has children everywhere. He lives a really long time, and his life is not satisfied with life's good things, meaning that even living vicariously through his children, he just cannot find a point where his soul is happy. And so he's pushing his kids the same direction that he's going, thinking that wealth, thinking that money, thinking that prestige, and all the little gods that he's set up are the be-all, the end-all. He pushes his kids. His kids take on that persona, but they don't find happiness in it. I can't tell you the number of teenagers that I worked with who came from really wealthy homes, and mom and dad did everything for them. And as they took their mom and dad's credit card and rung up all kinds of bills to have the best clothes, they were so angry at their parents. And I just want to take them, shake them by the ears and go, do you not see the opportunities that your parents are providing for you? But there was a disconnect because those things just don't satisfy. And this is where the verse gets really sad. 100 kids, he's given them everything. Look at what it says. He says, and he also has no burial. That's not random. This is what he's saying. He says, man, this guy has 100 kids. When he died, all the kids fought over the inheritance, but none of them wanted to show up at his funeral and do diddly squat for the guy. I mean, his whole life was 100 children. And at his death, nobody wanted to show up at his burial. Nobody took care of him. I mean, they just, dad's gone. Woohoo! Party time. Let's get rid of this. He was just a problem. Wasted relationships. See, we whatever relationship we think it is, if we set that up, it may be your husband, it may be your wife, it may be a fictional girlfriend that you still believe is out there somewhere. It may be a boyfriend. What happens once we set those relationships up as the ultimate and all of life's pursuit is about that relationship, we will do anything and give anything just to make that relationship bring the value in me, but it doesn't. This is why a teenage girl will meet this guy and the guy will start flirting with her and will use this. She will give her body away to that guy because she believes that if I just do this, my life will work, it will have meaning, it will have value because this guy will really care for me. And men are pigs, we abuse that. This is why sometimes we men will gravitate to a group of people who will lead us to absolutely mess our lives over and we will be drunk all the time. Because we just feel like, man, if I have a clan, if I have a posse, if I have a team, if I have a... And so we will just run to whatever makes us feel connected and we will pursue that. This is why a lot of us play fantasy football, which I do. Nothing wrong with fantasy football. I enjoy it. It's just not the be-all, the end-all. I learned that because I never win, and so I kind of gave up hoping it was. We find relationships and we pursue them, and this is the point. Solomon wants us to see that this guy's life is broken. I want to show you how bad it gets. He says, look at this. I say that a stillborn child is better off than he, for it comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. This is what he's saying. That guy's life, when the dust settles, that guy's life is worse off than a child who does, I mean, at birth dies. Wasted relationships. Man, I don't want to end up here. Relationships are good things. Children are great. They're a heritage of the Lord. They're a gift. Solomon's not denying that because Solomon wrote the other passage, okay? Solomon writes a lot about the goodness of children in the books of Proverbs, but what he's saying is if relationships are the be-all to end-all, that's all I'm about. Life's not going to connect. It's not going to work, and I'm going to end up broken. The third thing he talks about is wasted worship. Verses 7 through 11, real quick. He says, all the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is never satisfied. Now, let me tell you why I've labeled this worship. Because worship is not, when we talk about worship, and we have a worship service, we have a worship team. The guys have come this morning, they've done a great job. We appreciate their being here, and they're leading us in a time that we call worship. But I'm not talking about, worship in the Bible is more than singing or coming to church. Worship is answering the question, what is the pursuit of my life? What is my life ultimately about? That's what we worship. And he says, listen, if it's stuff under the sun, this is what's gonna happen. He says, if you're pursuing, worshiping stuff under the sun, he says, all the toil of man is for his mouth, his appetite, yet his appetite's never satisfied. Meaning, if you're pursuing something and it ends up being that you worship sex, you will want sex all the time, but you will never have your libido satisfied. If you're pursuing cars, you will be driving your car thinking you have the hottest car, and somebody's gonna pull up next to you in a better car, and you're mouth, your appetite is not going to be satisfied. If you are pursuing education, there's always somebody smarter. If you're pursuing money, there's always somebody richer. Our appetite is never satisfied. Does this describe you? Is your life a life that says, listen, I'm always pursuing something, I never get there? The life of faith, Jesus says, I came that they may have life and have it to the fullest, abundant. The pursuit of Jesus, why I'm calling it a pursuit, is a life of contentment and joy. And he says, listen, they're always eating, never satisfied. For what advantage does a wise man have over the fool? What does the poor man have who knows not how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. Meaning, better is it to live in contentment with what God has given you than to always be living thinking, I have to have something more, be better, find a better way, have a bigger, better house or whatever it is. Better to be content with what you have, the sight of the eyes. Because this is also vanity and striving after the wind. And so this is what happens. When I am always pursuing stuff under the sun as the be-all, the end-all, and I think I will find joy in life, then I get mad at God and I fight him over it. This is what he says. Look at this. Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is and what he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. That's what he's saying. He's talking about God here. And he's saying, listen, God is sovereign. He knows this earth, he knows you, he knows your heart, he knows who you are, he made you, he loves you, he's passionate about you. But if I'm not pursuing him, I'm literally fighting against him, and it's not smart to fight somebody who's stronger than he is, stronger than you are. He says, the more words, the more vanity, and what is the advantage to man? And this is what he's saying. When it comes to, listen, I waste opportunities, I waste relationships, but my life is still pursuing. It is worshiping. I value more than anything something under the sun, which actually puts me opposed to my creator. It's not that God is just idle watching. God is opposed to our idols, our sinfulness, our brokenness. He wants us to come to him, to know him, but I pursue those things. And so my life is all about that. And I find myself literally in this struggle with God. And that struggle leaves me where Solomon is pointing us. It leaves us empty and broken because I wasn't made for that. And so he concludes with this verse. For who knows what's good for man while he lives. The few days of his vain life, which passes like a shadow. For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? He says, listen, if all I live for is what's under the sun, life's going to be like a shadow. I'm not going to find any real purpose. But he asked a question. Who knows what's outside of this realm? Who knows what's beyond here? And he's asking a rhetorical question, but I don't think he's leaving us without an answer. The answer is the pursuit of Christ, the pursuit of God, the pursuit of knowing our Creator, which is very much like skydiving. Meaning that it is not a call to a comfortable, safe place. It's a call to a crazy adventure where I abandon myself and give myself wholly to my Creator. And that's the call of the gospel. Jesus died for our brokenness. He died for all these things because we live in a broken, twisted, messed up world, and it is our own fault. We all make the same decision Adam and Eve make to pursue anything but God. And Jesus came to offer redemption and restoration, meaning that the offer of the gospel means that God will begin to take my life and bring it back to that perfect relationship with himself and bring it back to the point where the things of this earth are there for my enjoyment, but not there for my worship. They're there for me to enjoy, to experience, to have contentment, but not for me to pursue as the be-all, the end-all. But it is a daily, crazy abandonment to Christ. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pray real quick here. The band's going to come out. We're going to sing, but I'm kind of leaving you with this little bit of tension because I want to come back just for a minute at the end of service, and I want to talk to you, show you an image of a couple guys who heard this call and what it looked like, and then we're going to end the service a little bit different. So I'm going to pray. Band's going to come up here. We're going to sing. We're going to celebrate Jesus, but then I'm going to come back at the end and kind of hopefully bring closure to this. Lord, I praise you and worship you. I honor you. You are good to us. And Lord, the call to follow you is an adventure, but it is a call to put away our other gods and pursue you. I just pray this morning a little bit, you'll teach us what that means. As we sing for the next few minutes, as we celebrate, as we worship, as we honor you, I pray that the song will speak into our heart, and it will lift our heart to the point where our hearts soar above the mundane of this world to find rest in you today. In your name I pray, amen. So how does this look? That's kind of the question, and that's kind of what I want to end with. How does this look in our lives? I mean, I'm saying, you know, leave our pursuit, this being trapped under the sun and follow Jesus. How does this look? Well, real quick, I want to introduce you to four guys that are in the Bible. Their names are Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and they were fishermen. Their life, their under-the-sun pursuit was in a boat, family business, Sea of Galilee. Every day, they'd throw up the sail, go out in the middle of the sea, drop nets, catch fish. If they had a good fishing day, they had enough to eat. They would have good stuff going on. If the fishing was bad, didn't work out so well. They'd seen Jesus. They'd hung out, and as they were living their lives, they'd seen Jesus kind of walking their neighborhoods. He was kind of from the same neck of the woods they were, had some same family heritage as a couple of them, and so they'd seen him. They kind of knew who he was. They'd seen him do some miracles. They'd seen him preach. They'd probably heard him speak a few times. But on this day, Jesus walks up, and they'd been fishing, and he has a conversation with them. And in the context of the conversation, he issues a challenge. And the challenge of Jesus here is really the challenge to all of this. So I want you to see this. Matthew chapter 4. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." I want you to see the response. Immediately, they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. And he called them. Immediately, they left the boat and their father and followed him. Jesus, just simple words, follow me. He didn't say, listen, here's what I want you to do. I want you to buy into a religious system with a bunch of do's and don'ts. He doesn't say, I want you to have everything figured out. But he says, I want you to follow me. And their response is amazing. They dropped their nets, left their boats. These guys left their families and followed Jesus. What does it mean to go skydiving? What does it mean to live this life of abandon? It means that I follow Jesus. He's a person. It is a relationship. It is a dynamic that doesn't fit into a nice, neat little box. It's not a nice, neat little system, but it is a life of faith, of trust, of knowing that I have a God who loved me enough to come himself for me, and now I follow Christ. For these guys, they left their boats, they left their fishing business, they left everything, and they began to pursue Jesus. They thought their boats, their fishing was going to give them purpose and hope and value and meaning. What they found is that in pursuing Christ, it was hard. It was challenging. They watched as the religious leaders made fun of him and put Jesus down. They were in a garden with Jesus when the person that they were following came and was arrested. Everything they'd put their hope in following Jesus, they spent 3 years of their life with the guy, listening to him teach, watching miracles, participating in his ministry, all these sorts of things, and they thought it had all crashed in on them as they saw the person that they followed put on a cross and die right in front of their eyes. I mean, the call to follow Jesus for these guys was not, oh, everything's hunky-dory, it's all happiness, we're all just sitting around drinking Kool-Aid, having a good time. There were moments of brokenness, there were moments of challenge. It was a very relational dynamic. It wasn't a system, it was just Jesus saying, follow me. And they left the pursuits that they had here under the sun, the things that they thought would bring value, and they said, listen, we will follow you. 3 days after the crucifixion, they were in a room where Jesus walked in the middle of them. And there was joy. There was excitement. There was kind of it all coming together. And these guys, these four guys, would go on to be used in great ways. But here's the connection I want to make for you. The life of faith. Here's what it means. In fact, we use this terminology all the time. I don't usually stand up here and call people Christians because the word Christian has so many connotations. Christian can mean that I'm culturally a Christian, meaning I go to church, but it doesn't affect me. It can mean I'm a comfortable Christian, meaning I do all the religious stuff, but just don't ask it to mess with my business. I can be a political Christian, meaning I vote for all the right things. I mean, Christian means so many things. We talk a lot about being a follower of Jesus. And what that means is that I've looked at Christ and I've realized all that he has to offer, but I've heard a call to reckless abandonment faith. And you just need to know this, okay? You need to understand. At Genesis, we're gonna make you uncomfortable because we're gonna ask you to sometimes put your feet on the edge of an airplane and jump. And if you want a safe religion, Christianity's not it. Being a follower of Jesus is a pursuit of something that is bigger than us, that we can't contain, but it is a call to something that is incredible, but it's not easy and it's not safe. And I just want to let you know that if you're here, like if you're seeking, you're like, I've just been in Genesis a few weeks. I've just started reading the Bible, just started praying, all this kind of stuff. What God is calling us to is this crazy leap of faith to follow Jesus. It's literally me saying, I will not pursue my own happiness anymore. I will pursue the glory of God. And that's it. But here's what happens. When I pursue Jesus, I get opportunities that are beautiful. and enjoying all those opportunities as a byproduct of pursuing Jesus. I have relationships with people that have deep meaning, and the joy in the relationships is a byproduct of knowing Jesus. I have this worship, and now I'm not worshiping stuff under the sun. My worship, the value of my life is connected to the one who created it all. And now that area of life, all of a sudden, I sing songs like the songs we just sang, and it's not just something that moves me emotionally. It's something that stirs me deep, deep in my heart, because I am understanding the trials and the struggle and the beauty and the joy of following Christ. And we are always, as Genesis Church, going to call you to that. The thing about the bucket list movie that ultimately challenged me so greatly was the fact that these two guys were coming from two different worlds. Morgan Freeman's character really is a guy of deep faith, and the movie really brings that out. And his relationship with his family was beautiful. The opportunities he'd had were not nearly the huge opportunities as Jack Nicholson's character, but man, he found joy in them. There was just a different, his life, although simple, had a quality to the life that the guy who had everything just couldn't find until they found each other, okay? Now, if you haven't seen the movie, we're about to give away the endings, and I really apologize for that, but there you go. But what happens is the movie comes to a close. Morgan Freeman's character ultimately dies. But the life change in Jack Nicholson's character, because he's been around a guy who didn't waste his opportunities, didn't waste relationships, didn't waste his worship, but really was a guy who really ultimately has a pursuit that's different. He is so profoundly affected. And the movie kind of ends with him speaking at Morgan Freeman's funeral. Here's what we're going to do this morning. We're just going to end the service this way. We're going to show you the last this clip from this movie. Because here's the challenge. Someday, I don't want to end like being really dark and morbid, but the truth of the matter is someday, this is us. I do not want to be the guy who has 100 kids and nobody wants to show up here. And I don't want to be the person who it's all fake and weird. I want to be the person who if when that day comes, people are rejoicing because they said, you know, that dude followed Jesus. He enjoyed life to the full. He went skydiving and life connected. I do not want to be the person who has a little orphan Annie decoder pin going, that's it. That's all that this life was about. So we're going to show the video. When the video's over, we'll put up a slide and say, hey, you're free to go. But just wrestle with this for a few minutes, all right?